This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to the next edition of the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and today we touch base and get to share another fantastic Ironman Kona story as I head over and chat to Lewis Eccleston today. Before we get into that chat, though, there's been a bit of a buzz on social media. You may have heard on the podcast we are giving away an entry into an Ironman race valued at $750. If you'd like to enter that contest, if you haven't yet, the draw is taking place at the end of the year. Okay, so you are almost running out of time. There's a bit of time still left to get into the draw, but don't hesitate. Get in there right now. If you'd like to find out more about it, all you have to do is head over to this URL. Okay, it is thekonaedge.com/win, and all the details are there. Alternatively, if you are in the United States, simply text the word Ironman to 44222, and I'll send you all the details back. That's Ironman to 44222, or simply head over to thekonaedge.com/win. It's open to anyone, anywhere in the world, and yeah, I look forward to doing it. We did it last year, going to be doing it again this year, so make sure you go check it out. That's thekonaedge.com/win. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by My Training Day Triathlon Academy, which was started in 2006 when Claire and Kent Horner realized their passion was helping other athletes reach their goals. My Training Day is home to online coaching, squad training, an online store, bike fitments, and nutrition assessments. What began with a handful of athletes has now grown exponentially, and Kent and Claire, along with 9 other My Training Day coaches, coach more than 280 athletes both nationally and internationally. My Training Day affiliated with Joe Frill in 2014, allowing access to a world of knowledge from one of the world's best-known original coaches. My Training Day makes use of tools such as Best Bike Split, Trainer Roads, and Training Peaks for power analysis, as well as Coach's Eye for video analysis. Their passion lies in helping others realize their full potential and reach their goals. My Training Day caters for any athletes, from your complete novice right through to your elite athlete. To find out more about My Training Day Triathlon Academy, simply head over to mytrainingday.com, or to find out more, head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching. You can check them out there, as well as all our coaches in the Coach's Corner. And if you are a coach or have a coaching business and you'd like to be featured on the podcast and the website, simply head over to that URL, scroll right down to the bottom, and get all the details there. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Welcome on to the Kona Edge in Manchester, in the United Kingdom. Lewis Eccleston. Lewis, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Brad. Thanks for inviting me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
Lewis, you're back home, back into the swing of things, following your experience on the Big Island. How's the body holding up?
Really good. You hear so many things about the island and how tough it's going to be out there, and you never know really what to experience, especially because it was my first time. But I'm feeling really good, reflecting on the race, and I'm really happy with how it went. Couldn't have gone any better, really.
You ready for another one?
Definitely, yeah. I can't wait to get back into training. I'm thinking, I've got about 5 or 6 months more training to go now, and I can't really be bothered. I just want to get racing again, but it's part of it. You know, you've got to knuckle down over the winter and get some miles in the legs ready for next year.
Lewis, as far as your sporting background,
forward to that.
Your background is concerned, what's your, I mean, were you pretty active as a kid growing up? What's your sporting pedigree? Where do you come from?
I used to play football when I was younger, from like 5 or 6 year old, and I played up to about 16 or 17, and then in 2011, I did the London Marathon after I stopped playing football, I just started doing a bit of running after I stopped playing football because there's nothing else really to do. I did the London Marathon in 3 hours 59. And I was really happy to do that, and it really, it was a big achievement for me to do something like that. And then in 2012, I did my first triathlon. Basically, because I'd started running so late, and then I was getting injuries and stuff, so I decided to start swimming just to keep the fitness up from running. And then I was already like, I was riding my bike, and I had a unicycle as well, what I used to ride on. So I had a bit of fitness, like cycling and on my unicycle and stuff, so I decided to have a go at a triathlon. And that's where it took off, really. I didn't look back, really. And after I'd done my first triathlon, I did a few sprint races for the age group, British triathlon and stuff like that around Europe. And then that was it, yeah. I just carried on from there and not looked back.
Your connection broke up a bit. You said a unicycle. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I just, one Christmas I asked for a unicycle.
As one does.
And, I just used to go out riding on my bike, and my unicycle, and I just loved it, you know, just going out there on my own and being active, and doing stuff similar to now, really. I just love training and going out and riding and doing stuff and being active. Loved it.
That's brilliant. I mean, we've got a couple of big cycle races here in South Africa. I think they're the two largest time cycling events in the world. The one is in the city that I live in, and there's a couple of guys that do it. It's 106 kilometers, and they do them on unicycles. That's a special type of crazy, that.
Yeah, you get some funny looks. It's mad. Yeah,
absolutely. Lewis, as far as a kid growing up playing football, and let me just, we've got a lot of American audience as well. We're talking soccer, not American football, not NFL, but playing football. Were you any good at it? I mean, did you play at any competitive level, or was it just sort of junior club stuff?
Yeah, I played for a few clubs. As growing up, I had a few trials for Bolton Wanderers. They were sort of like a Premier League team at the time. I also played for the county a few times, representing the county at like at cup finals and stuff like that. So I was captain of a few teams, and yeah, I enjoyed it. Really enjoyed playing football. And I think if I adopted the effort and the way I go about training for triathlon now into football when I was younger, I think I'd have done a lot better in football. But when you're so young, you don't realise. You don't, because you're younger, you don't think the same as when you're older. If you work so hard at something, you're going to get something out of it. But when you're younger, you can't really get your head around that, if you know what I mean.
Mm. If you could go back, knowing what you know now, would you have given football a much bigger go?
Yeah, I'd have been absolutely 100% focused, and I think I'd have done a lot better.
Well, let's talk about that first London Marathon. Often I chat to triathletes here on the show, and I get emails from our listeners saying, gee, as an average sort of age group, I look at what some of these guys and girls do first time out, and they think, I could never do that. But just dipping under 4 hours in your first marathon, that gives the rest of us hope. Lewis?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. I had no idea. I can't even remember if I wore a watch or not. I just ran it just because I wanted to do it, and I enjoyed to do it. And I believe I was really lucky to get into the race. It's like a 1 in 5 chance of getting into the race there. It was a good experience.
Yeah, I mean, the London Marathon is spectacular. And it sounds like it was quite a natural progression into triathlon, and it seems like you found your way pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, I joined a running club to train for the London Marathon, and there was people in the club who did triathlons, so I sort of looked up to them and always fancied a challenge, and they was talking to me about triathlon, and they said the same, they thought the same as me, by saying about, if you're getting injured and stuff, why don't you try to swim, try to ride your bike a bit more. And it just progresses like that, really. Like everybody else does that. It seems to be, you hear the same story over and over again. Mm. How they come from one background, and then they either get bored or they get injured, and then just progress into triathlon like that.
Did you? I mean, you spoke about doing a couple of short ones, but it sounds like you sort of were attracted to the long things. I mean, it's not often someone goes, you know what, I'm going to start running and I'm going to run a marathon. You might just go and do a 5 or a 10 or maybe a half marathon. But it sounds like to me that you there's something that's drawing you towards the long stuff.
Yeah, basically, just because I've seen it on the TV, the London Marathon. I've seen it on the TV and I thought, wow, I want to have a go at that. And then after, because I set myself a couple of targets to do the European races, you know, to try and win medals in triathlon and duathlon. I won a few medals and then I was like, I sat down and spoke to my coach, Paul. You've had Paul Savage, you've been on the show before. And we was like, right, what's next? And I thought, Ironman. Next challenge, and it's you need something to really motivate you when you're training, you know, and to make you do the training, or else it seems pretty worthless, doesn't it? So yeah, it was Ironman, and I focused on that and I trained for it, and I loved it. So
I think that's such a great piece of advice, Lewis, particularly for people getting into the sport. They almost think, you know what, I'm going to train and get fit enough to do a half Ironman or a full Ironman, and then I'll enter. And it's, in my mind, just, you know what, draw a line in the sand. Go and drop the money on an entry so that you know that it's on that date and there's no backing down, and go and do it. Just get it done. And I think that is so vital, having a goal. When did the goal of Kona come onto to the radar for you?
It was when I did my first Ironman, it was always in the back of my mind to do it one day. But because people say, oh, you're young for doing Ironman, should you really be doing it so young? And especially on my first one, I decided I'm not going to go to Kona. I'm not going to go to Kona, even if I qualify. Basically, just because it was experience and it was my first one. And I wanted to experience it and get to know the race in Ironman, really. And then after I'd done my first one, because I qualified for Ironman when I did my first Ironman, and for Kona when I did Bolton the first time, and then the following year I thought, right, last year I was gonna target Kona, and I did, and I went.
Talk to me about the difference in preparation going there to literally just enjoy yourself and soak it all up, and going there to race it and go as well as you can once you've had that experience of, as you say, experiencing what Kona has to offer.
Going as in how I approached Kona.
Yeah, from a training perspective, did you do much different? From a mindset perspective, how did things change? Sort of second time round.
Nothing really. Because I live basically right next to the course, and I get to train on it every weekend if I like. And we didn't change anything about the race. Just trained hard over the winter, and hope that I could have a good day on the race, because you hope that everything goes right on the day. And that nothing goes wrong. I just approached it the same way as I did the first one. And I managed to shave off about 10 minutes off my time to qualify.
Brilliant. As far as you've mentioned the winter a couple of times, and something that pops up often here on the Kona Edge is consistency and consistency of training if you want to get better at this thing. How important is it for you to sort of keep going and not just sort of maintaining in the winter, but using that block to set yourself up for success in the on season?
Yeah, that's it. There's no secrets, really. It's just consistent training over the winter. And you just got to sit. You just got to do your sessions what people set you. You know, if you do your sessions and you don't keep skipping sessions and you can stay consistent, there's no secrets to it, really. It's just hard work over the winter months. You know, when you're going out on the bike in the winter and nobody else wants to come with you, you just got to go and do it and get it done. Tick the boxes, really.
As far as coaching, you've mentioned Paul Savage, who we've had on the podcast before. He's your coach. Did you, from day one, get someone to help you out, or has this come with time?
Yeah, I approached Paul for some coaching, basically, for a European event, and he helped me out. He just kept my work really basic, and he was just like, if you do this, then you're going to do okay. And I went, and I think I got a bronze medal on my first attempt in the duathlon in the Europeans. And after that, he said, I love the way you train. I love the way you approach the race. I'll take you on. I'll take you on as one of my athletes, and I'll do it. And at the time, he was working with Joe Skipper as well. He was obviously a big name, and I was taken back by that. I thought, wow, that's really good. If he's going to take the time out to help me and try and progress me as an athlete, then he must see something in me. So it motivated me to keep working hard for him. You know what I mean? Now it's like 3 or 4 years and working really well.
Are you one of those guys that sort of needs to know exactly what you do, don't question it, and just if Paul says do X, Y, and Z, you go out and do X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, that's it. It's been in the game long enough to know what's right. I've not been in it that long, really, about 4 or 5 years. And if someone, you've just got to trust them, haven't you? You know, if someone tells you to do this, then you do it. And if you see it, what he's done with other athletes, then you've really got to believe what he's saying and his coaching styles are, and just do it. And when you start seeing the results as well, there can be no questions asked. Mm. You just get on.
Talk to me about, the two sports, football, obviously coming from a football background, to Ironman, they're worlds apart. It's almost like Manchester and Kona, to be honest. And, it's a team sport. You're 90 minutes on the pitch, whereas Ironman, you're out there for a long time on your own. Have you struggled with that coming from a team sport background?
I love it, actually, because, you know, in Ironman, you know, if there's nowhere to hide. If you're going to give 50% on the day, then you're not going to have your best result, and it's going to look pretty rubbish. You know, if you give 100%, everyone can see you giving 100%, and that's the final result. There's no hiding from it. Whereas if you play football and team sports, then if you don't give 100%, then you're going to be carried by somebody else, and it can be quite frustrating. You know, if you're giving your all on the game in a game of football and somebody isn't, it can be very annoying, really frustrating. Whereas you get out what you put in when you're doing Ironman, don't you? You know, you train hard, you get the results.
Absolutely. Lewis, what's been the biggest lesson that Ironman and triathlon has taught you?
You get out what you put in. It's simple. You know, people, you know, you hear them flapping and they're like worrying about races and stuff like this. But at the end of the day, you do the training, you do the preparation, you're looking at races and stuff like that, and you get out what you put in. There's nothing hard about it, really.
You've also mentioned the duathlons. I know you've had some great results, particularly in European Championships duathlon. Talk to me a little bit about racing both, and what do you prefer? If obviously the duathlon scene's not as big as the triathlon scene, but if it was up to you and you could only do one, which one would it be?
Triathlon.
Yeah,
I like to do duathlons because obviously I'm a bit of a weaker swimmer, and I love the duathlons do suit me, but it's good to do early in the season to see how well you come out of the winter block training, and to see how much you've come on from the previous year. But yeah, it's not a very long season, the duathlon, is it? So it's good to get racing tri-season, and I do prefer that more than duathlons.
Are you one of those people that are always trying to work on something and trying to improve like one aspect of the sport at any particular time? For instance, like in the last sort of season, what have been some of the big things that you've worked on and some of the big struggles that you've had to overcome?
It's kind of difficult when you're working full time, because you've got to try and make the most of the time you've got. You know, you can't focus too much on one thing because you've not got that many hours. But Yeah, just keep it balanced, really. Try and keep each discipline equal. I don't specifically set aside any time to train specifically for the swim or specifically for the bike. Just try and work hard in each discipline and in each time slot I get through the day.
Talk to me a little bit about your domestic situation, work-wise, family life. What's a normal day sort of look like for Lewis Eccleston?
Yeah, well, I'm a builder, so it's hands-on really all the time, every day. You're getting up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, getting home at 6 at night, and you've got to fit your training in the evenings, and especially sometimes with the swimming. You know, you're coming home and you're going out to swimming at like 8:30 at night, and you don't get home till 11 o'clock. You know, because you're traveling, and it is hard work. Sometimes, you know, you wish I could just be a pro, but it's not like that. You've got to try and balance it as well as you can. And that's what I mean. You've got to want to do the work to do well. You've got to want to come home and train. You can't think, oh, I can't be bothered training tonight. If you want to do well and you want to get the results in race season, then you've got to put the work in.
I mean, that's amazing. As a builder, I mean, it's a pretty physical occupation. You're not sitting behind a desk for 8 hours a day. How do you cope with that? Especially, I mean, there will be days, and I know this because I spent a couple of years in London where I was actually a builder's mate, and I carried cement and bricks, and it was seriously, seriously hard work. So how do you get home from work where you've had a really hard day and you go, gee, you know what, I really don't feel like doing this, but as you say, you coaches put on your program, you've got to go and do it. How do you motivate yourself to get out the door?
Because I love it. I just love to train. You wake up in the morning and you're thinking about Ironman and racing. You're at work, you're thinking about racing and Ironman and what can you do to get better. And it's that that motivates you. You've got to really believe that you want to do something and you want to do it. And if that's what you want to do to get to that level, then that's what you've got to do. You've got to tick the boxes to get there. So that's what motivates me. But I think doing the work that I do also helps me a lot, you know, because I'm not sat down. I get to, like, I'm carrying things all day, so it's always almost a co-workout every single day for me. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Monday mornings, when you've done a tough race, it's pretty difficult sometimes. But most of the time, it's really good.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, workout.
I can vouch for that. I lost so much weight in that little stint that I had in London. It was ridiculous from carrying bricks and bags of cement. It was hard work, but I tell you what, it was great to keep in shape. And as far as your colleagues in that go, I mean, I think back to the guys that I worked with, Lewis. They weren't the poster boys for good health. I can tell you that much. It was they all smoked like chimneys. I think they were only working so they could go to the pub after work for a couple of beers. They must think you're crazy.
Yeah. I think the building sites that I work on, they're the only building sites that have smoothies and salad pots, you know, in the... everyone else has got, like, sugary drinks and crisps, chocolate, and you do get looked at sometimes, funny.
I love that. Absolutely love that. As far as sort of balancing and finding the time, that's probably one of the biggest things that age groupers struggle with, in my experience. Are you pretty set in your ways that you look at your training program maybe on a Sunday and go, okay, this is what I have to do and work it around, or are you pretty flexible and you can mix things up as you go, or do you need to have that set structure?
I like to have the structure there down on paper where it's, this is what you're doing, this is what you're going to do, and it's basically that I make time to do it. That's just what you do. Sometimes if the weather's bad, then you change the session. You know, you can do a session indoors, but apart from that, there's nothing really that is going to stop me from doing the session. You know, you can ride inside, you can swim inside, and running is, yeah, basically run wherever. I've got plenty of places to run, so there's no excuse really to start ducking and diving and skipping sessions.
Absolutely. Lewis, as far as things you're proud of, what are you most proud of in your triathlon career?
I would say the recent Ironman results at Bolton the last couple of times in the UK. Basically because I just didn't expect to do as well as I've done. But I think that backs up ticking the boxes and getting the work done and coming home and training when you're tired. I think that the results at the UK are the best results for me.
How much of an advantage, as you say, you practically live on the bike course, how much of an advantage is that knowing exactly what to expect on race day and going in there and almost feeling like home?
Yeah, it's good. I spoke to a few of the pros after the race and they've said to me, it's a really tough course, you know, it's twisted and turning, it's up and down all the time. And for me, I know the road inside out. I know where the potholes are. I know where everything is on the road. So it's really beneficial for me to know that.
Talk to me about your experience on the Big Island, particularly coming from the UK. Climate-wise, very different. Was that something, did you struggle to acclimatise? I know we spoke to Lucy Charles a couple of years ago, and after her first race in Kona as an age grouper, she won her age group, and obviously she had a fantastic race in 2017. But one of the things that her and her boyfriend Reese said to me was it was just so hot. They couldn't get over how hot it was. Lucy's obviously got it down pat. She figured that out. Do you feel that you sort of are starting to figure out the climate and how to deal with it in Kona?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, Reese and Paul Savage are quite close together. They talk to each other. And I was lucky to get advice off them too, which was really good for me. And I went into a heat chamber, an environmental chamber in Manchester, at the Manchester Institute. And I got a chance to go in there and experiment on heart rate and power and to get used to it, and I got a lot of information from there, which was priceless, really. I think if I didn't go into there, then I'd have been going out to Kona absolutely blind, with no information, not knowing what power, what heart rate I was going to ride at. And it was really good to get in there to do that. And we're going out there so early. They had about 10 or 11 days to acclimatise and to train and to put some of the rides and the data that we had to test out there. And I found that I acclimatized really well. It's surprising how fast you can acclimatize. And you hear so many people saying about how it's so difficult out there, the heat's unbelievable, it's this, it's that. But if you do the work and you do the homework to what your limits are and what you can push yourself to in that heat, and you can go out there and ride to that, then it's nothing hard about it. It's simple if you do your homework and you know what you're capable of doing. Where like in the race, I didn't feel hot or like I was overheating. Like it was really difficult at all. I was well within myself and I was comfortable all race. And that was the same in the training. Even though it was in like 38 degrees heat, I was sticking to what I know I was capable of doing. And coming from the UK, it's not, I can't push myself that hard because it is hot and you will blow up if you don't do the right things. You do the right things and it's nothing complicated about it really. It's simple.
How many of those sessions in that heat chamber did you do in the build up to Kona?
I only did 3 sessions in there. Basically, that's not enough. I'd have performed a lot better if I'd have gone in there since when I qualified in July. If I'd have qualified in July, if I'd have gone in there 2 or 3 times a week on the lead up to Kona, then I'd have climatized a lot more. And have probably performed a bit better.
I think
that's basically all you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's great advice, and not just for Kona. Lewis, I think that counts for all races across the board, particularly if you're traveling. You mentioned the sort of getting there early, which we'll chat about in a moment. But climate, I think people really underestimate climate. And if you're coming from a hot climate and you're possibly doing a colder race, you need to know how your body's going to react in those situations. And things like that, you can control in training. Yes, you might need to do a bit more in an indoor trainer. If you're looking for hot, you might need to do it in your garage with a fan on and a heater just to sort of get that humidity up and the heat up. But, it sounds simple, but so few people actually do it.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, even out on the race, I like to watch Team Sky and how they approach things. Dave Brailsford and how they keep it simple, but they just tick the boxes to do what they need to do to get to the level they need to get at, and sort of approach triathlon the same way. And you see so many people in triathlon, especially at the World Championships, you just wouldn't think that many people in the World Championships would get out the swim and absolutely nail it up Polina Hill, out onto the Queen K. And I was getting overtaken on Polina Hill by like 60-year-old guys on bikes. I'm just shaking my head thinking, I'm at the World Championships and people are so stupid to just be nailing it from the start of the race. And yeah, later in the race, from about 55, 60 miles, I didn't get overtaken. I was just going past people all the way back home on the bike because people had just blown up, and I don't get understand why people do it. You know, it's not hard. If you go out too hard and you don't stick to your numbers, you're going to blow up and it's going to be a nightmare for you.
Yeah, the go until you blow strategy is not fun. Second half of the marathon, no. I can tell you that much. Let's talk about arriving early. You arrived in Kona, I think you said 10 or 11 days before. And before we started recording, you were telling me just how the time zones really messed you up. You were waking up in the middle of the night, basically, wondering what's going on. It's important to sort of get yourself, not just from a climate perspective, but also getting those sleep patterns in and sort of feeling human before race day arrives.
Yeah, definitely. One advice I could give anyone is to get out there early and make sure you can arrive fit and healthy and get used to that time change, because it takes about 4 days, 5 days to get used to the time zones. I found myself waking up in the night just walking around because I was wide awake. It was pretty strange. And then you want to go to bed in the afternoon. But yeah, you need to get there plenty of time and get yourself used to the changes.
Do you feel like you've got unfinished business on the Big Island?
I wouldn't say unfinished business, but I'd definitely be back. Definitely go back again. I don't think I'd go back unless I was going to be competitive. I wouldn't like to go just make the numbers up. So if I was going to go, I'd like to knock off, say, I'd have to be knocking off 30 minutes off my time. So, yeah. I've got a lot of experience from there now, and I know how I'd approach it slightly differently this time, next time going around. But yeah, I'll be back there again, definitely.
Time-wise, splits, how did you go this year?
In swim, swam 101. On the bike, I was 5.12, 5.10. I was thinking I'd be more 5 hours, which would have got me on the podium, but didn't, because I ridden within myself and I stuck to the game plan, and that's what the time was in the end of the day. And then on the run, I ran a 3:28. I was really pleased with the run because I ran a 1:45 for the first half of the marathon, and I ran 1:43 for the second half. So I was really pleased with that. Knowing that I paced it really good.
That is incredible. I mean, negative splits in an Ironman marathon, nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. I'm sure the coach was chuffed.
Yeah, really pleased. Really pleased that we nailed the game plan and we stuck to it. And it was a solid race, yeah. Brilliant. Couldn't give any more.
If I say the word Kona, Lewis, what do you think of?
Fun. Yeah, for my mind, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And I sort of went there with the thinking of it's going to be so hard. I'm not going to be able to cope in the heat. And because you see so many pictures and you hear so many things of people exploding out there. And Yeah, you just got to approach it in the right way, and you've got to race within yourself. Doesn't matter what anybody else is doing, because it is deadly out there if you get it wrong.
Yeah, it's a long day if you do mess it up. Well, Lewis Eccleston, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking a little bit about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time today on the Cone Edge.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Speak to you soon.
This episode of the Cone Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to theconaedge.com/indoor. That's theconaedge.com/indoor. And that's about it for another edition of the Kona Edge today. Before I go, though, we've also been getting lots and lots of iTunes reviews in, and you may have heard me bantering on about it here on the podcast, but it really does help us. And if you haven't left us one yet, I would appreciate it massively. Go on in from Luvan BL, I think it is, in South Africa, one of my countrymen, saying loving it, giving us a 5-star, saying great tips and advice, whether a beginner or a seasoned triathlete, keep it up. Luvan, thank you so much for that 5-star iTunes review. And yeah, if you'd like to find out exactly how to do it, all you have to do is head over to theconaedge.com/iTunes, and it'll show you exactly how to do it step by step. So until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, thanks for listening. We look forward to catching up there. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of The Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to theconaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.